edition of the Bulldog Hours. 2 hours on a Friday, of course, from 2 to 4, and then it'll be time for Nick and Nick in the Zone. They'll go to 5:30 today from Fashion Furniture, and it'll be time for Paul and the opening of baseball. Bat and ball season's ready to go at home. Softball already has played in a tournament they did in Florida last week, but Linda's team is ready to go in about 3 hours on the east side of Cedar, and that'll be a game that our good friend Matt Norville, who was just with me yesterday, will have for you on 790 at 5 o'clock Cal Poly, and then that'll be followed by Fordham tonight, a doubleheader kickoff classic. And on the west side of Cedar, it is time at Biden-Bennett for Fresno State baseball. Irvine in, the Bulldogs are going to spend the entirety of this first month at home, and then basically, as far as the weekends go, everything in March on the road, and some major challenges as we get ready for conference after that. But this is a great time of year. The weather is terrific right now, though I'll tell you what, when both teams hit the road in a while, we need some rain because once again, after getting the drought at least temporarily out of the way, it's right now an ugly possibility once again for this summer coming up. So want to balance the great weather and what it means for the outdoor sports with the fact that we would like some rain at the proper time. That having been said, 5:30, 9:40 Paul tonight, 5 o'clock, 7:90 Matt, and throughout the weekend, not only Bulldog baseball, but basketball tomorrow as Utah State is in, again with Paul and Coach Q, having that one, and that is an important game for Fresno State if they want to make sure they build momentum heading to Las Vegas, and whether they're going to be the 8-9 seeds or 7-10, somewhere in there, we're going to find out in the next week or so. All right, guys, chance right now to talk to the aforementioned voice of the Bulldogs, Paul Leppler, on a Friday for a change. By the way, Monday we won't be on because of President's Day, so a good chance to talk to Paul about this weekend coming up before we get to mid next week and we get back on the air. Paul, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Tony. Looking forward to opening night and quite a weekend for Bulldog sports.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like I said, the weather is just terrific. I know they started the kickoff classic softball-wise, not Fresno State, but Cal Company playing this morning at 9 a.m., and they couldn't ask for better weather. And tonight, again, I know it'll get a little cool during the game, but it should be a great evening and a first pitch at 6 o'clock. Paul, when we last left this baseball team, we didn't realize that somehow, inadvertently, we were seeing the portent of things to come, meaning a Fresno State team right on the precipice of closing the deal, in this case, to win a regional at Stanford. Mid-innings, it gets away in a big fifth inning, and it became what carried over to football and unfortunately through basketball, which is Fresno State so close toward the end of things and it gets away. I know baseball wants to take the step to get to a super regional for the first time since the Bulldogs won the whole thing in 2008. I also know that Bates lost a lot through the draft. Paul, how confident are you in this team that is picked for second behind San Diego State to be able to be what we saw at Stanford last June?
Well, at this point, I'd say, you know, the biggest difference between that team last year and where this team stands today, and I'm careful to say it that way because I'm not sure where this team's going to stand a month or 2 months from now. But the biggest difference right now would be you don't have a first-round draft pick on the mound like you had last year in Jensen, who threw 100 miles an hour, and you don't have the senior class that you had last year. I mean, if you look at what McCarthy Tatum and Zach Ashford and Nolan Dempsey did for that team, they're the biggest reason that, you know, that team was in the postseason and had that kind of success. Those guys were clutch. They were consistent. They had amazing senior seasons. That said, I really love this team's depth on the mound. I mean, you have some extremely experienced juniors and even sophomores who've been through battles on the mound, who know what it takes and know the difference, how small the difference can be between a win or a loss and how your attention detail has to be there. They also have some guys on the offensive side who've got lots of Division I at-bats, who played a lot as freshmen and sophomores and have grown up. But I would say the biggest thing, if you say that where that team was then and where this team is now, that team had an infield defense it could really rely on, had been tested and proven. this team doesn't have that yet. You're going to have some guys who aren't going to be tested early in the season, and I'm sure there are going to be some mistakes. And they don't have that ace that Ryan Jensen turned into last year. Now, Ryan Jensen wasn't that ace as a freshman or sophomore. He blossomed into that guy last year. So when you look at Jaime Arias, when you look at Oscar Carvajal, Nico Mitchell, even Jameson Hill, who can't play this weekend because of what happened at the Stanford Regional and the suspension that carries over. But those four guys are juniors with professional talent. They're all going to have a chance to play at the next level. And when you have four juniors like that, you have a chance to win some weekend series. It's going to be fun to watch this team. There's a lot of speed on this team. There's also a lot of power on this team. One of the big questions will be, how many strikeouts are on this team? What's their plate discipline like? Can they put the ball in play as opposed to falling into an all-or-nothing pattern? And, you know, we'll get our initial answer to that tonight at 6:05. And I like, in talking to Coach Batesold the other day when he came on with us from our farm show, Tulare World Ag Expo show, you know, he talked about the fact that UC Irvine is on this schedule in the opening weekend for a reason, that UC Irvine year in, year out, is one of those teams that tends to do everything by the book. The fundamentals are very sound. They don't beat themselves. So you have to rise up and beat them. And when you play a program like that right out of the gate, it's a good gauge, A, for where you are. B, it's an example on the other side and the other dugout of where you need to be. And so if the Dogs can win this series this weekend, I think that would be a phenomenal start.
Paul, the one thing about how the season ended last year, it had been a while, and you and I have certainly talked about it for many, many years now on a week-to-week basis. It had been a while since Fresno State had been in the position it was in that final game up in Palo Alto. To have it get away the way it did, and again, it wasn't like a ninth-inning loss. It was mid-innings, a big fifth inning that took the Bulldogs out, though they did close it right back to two runs. They just couldn't get past Beck, who played a Houdini act because I didn't think he had that much left in his arm. He certainly did. Stanford deserved to win. But it has to stick in the craw in a positive sense for this team. I would imagine for the guys that are coming back, it has to be, let's finish the deal, right? There has to be motivation from how close they were last year.
Without question. Having that taste of the postseason is so valuable. I mean, you think back a decade ago, you know, in 2006, that was the best regular season team Mike Batesold had in 2006. I mean, that rotation was stellar with Pfister and Romero and Underwood, and that was Coach Batesold's first NCAA tournament team. They hadn't been in 5 years, you know, since the next to last year that Coach Bennett was here. And that team got there, got that experience, lost in the regional finals, went back the next year, lost in the regional finals. By 2008, you've got a team full of guys who this is not new for them. You know, they've been in a regional the last 2 years, and they didn't like not emerging from it, so they were ready, whether they had the toughest regional in the country or not, which they did, they were going to win it, and they did. And just that taste of the postseason last year for everyone who's coming back, even the guys who redshirted last year, being around that, I think that's going to be really powerful. And I think the confidence of this team should be at a high level. I can tell Coach Batesold's energized. You know, he's lost weight. He's got more energy. He was never short on it to begin with. He's got another year of experience and another postseason bid under his belt, and, you know, he adds those things up. And, you know, there's a reminder that you need to give him some credit for last year, too, because the prior year, at the end of the year, he had gone back to the drawing board. He said, what do we need to do differently because we're not getting to the postseason? And clearly he found a way and had a fantastic 2019 campaign. And seeing him pick second, you know, I think that's fair. San Diego State is really talented. San Diego State will end up hosting the conference tournament, so there's an advantage for the Aztecs. But, you know, I think Fresno State's right there with them. And it'll be really interesting with an abbreviated Mountain West schedule this year, where you're playing nine fewer games in conference than you ever did before. And the Bulldogs are one of the fortunate teams that get four of their seven Mountain West series at home, as opposed to four on the road and only three at home. That could end up being the difference in who gets in that four-team bracket for the Mountain West tournament and who doesn't. And in this case, the schedule's on Fresno State's side.
The other thing, Paul, is you and I have talked, and it's not an excuse. It is a reality of this conference that you have some schools like New Mexico, Nevada would be another case in point, where weather in May can be a huge issue and it can change the character of a winner-take-all tournament. The fact it's in San Diego, as you and I have talked, is as good as it gets if you're not going to have it at home, because the weather doesn't mainly become a factor down there. There are times it can be. I think it's one of the reasons, Paul, Fresno State has played pretty well in San Diego. So when you look at this, do you say going down there, as long as you're one of the four, you have a fairly leveled playing field that maybe we did not see, say, in Albuquerque in years gone by?
There's no question about it. And I know it sounds crazy to people, but if you have seen it and you've experienced, you know it's real. I mean, I was talking to Linda Garza the other day, the softball coach. She and her program, thanks to their boosters, have made a significant financial investment in technology to help their offense this year, because she realized in this conference, with altitude of play, offense becomes more important than what's usually at a premium in softball, which is pitching. If you can't score 5 or 6 runs a game in the Mountain West in softball, you're going to have a hard time winning the conference, because you're playing at altitude and balls that would on the home run balls, it's the pop-ups that turn into base hits. It's the ground balls that are hit because people have to play so deep. The altitude really is a factor. It really does change the game. I think in bat and ball sports, more than football, basketball, any of those other sports. And I think, you know, Coach Garza's onto something. I think Coach Batesel sees it too, that if you're going to win the Mountain West and win in the postseason, you need a team that is strong enough and powerful enough to win at altitude, that plays good enough defense and pitches well enough at sea level. So you really have to be a versatile team that can handle both of those scenarios. Otherwise, the schedule alone may cross you out of the championship.
I want to mention to people, with the NBA All-Star game this weekend in Chicago, it was this morning 2 degrees in Chicago. So embrace it, friends. This is why we live out here, so we can talk about the nuances of weather. At least we can go out and play bat and ball sports in early to mid-February, and that's what we look forward to tonight. One final thing for you, Paul. It's about Larson. We talk about what happened in that final game. Now, look, he had had a really good year, but that was not a really good time for him. Can he, as a young guy, shake it off? You fairly confident that that's just motivation from what happened last June, not anything that's a hangover? Because with, as you mentioned, Arias and Carvajal up toward the front of the rotation, Larson becomes a key guy with Sullivan in the back end. What's your feeling about Larson?
There's no question in my mind he'll bounce back, Tony. Kevin's one of those guys. He's just a joy to be around. All his teammates love him. He loves to compete. He doesn't take himself too seriously, and I mean that in a good way. He's dedicated, but, you know, he's not disillusioned. And I think he's going to go down as a favorite around here. I think he's going to have some great moments on the mound, and it's really no different than all the great pitchers that Fresno State's ever had. I mean, that same ballpark in Stanford, I saw a skinny freshman from Washington Union named Matt Garza out there throwing. He could barely fill out a uniform, and he's trying to face a loaded Stanford lineup in his first college game, and it was a disaster. And that guy went on to become an American League Championship Series MVP and one of the best ever from Fresno State, and a guy who's a credit to our community. You know, if you ask Bobby Jones about the first time he pitched in college, Mark Gardner, just keep going down the list. And it's, you know, everybody has a moment where things don't go their way. And for Kevin, unfortunately, his worst outing of the year came on the biggest stage with the highest stakes. But he knows he'll get more opportunities. And if anything, that's just going to, I think, strengthen his resolve and really laser in his focus to be the best he could be. And that's what I expect this year. I think they're a very deep pitching staff. Ryan Overland did a tremendous job with that staff last year. This year he has the benefit of, you know, some added insight from the last Bulldog pitcher to throw a no-hitter. Hard to believe that was a decade ago that Greg Gonzalez did that at Hawaii, but good to have Gonzo as part of the coaching staff this year. There's a real positive energy around the ballpark right now, and let's hope that remains all weekend with some big crowds. And if you wear pink tonight, you get in free.
Yeah, no doubt. And Arias will go tonight. Any idea about pitch limitation, Paul? How is Bates going to handle this?
You know, typically his MO is early in the season, those pitch counts are a little lower. So if Jaime is having success, I think, you know, he gets into the 90s, you'll shut him down there. By May, that might be 115, 120. But early in the season, he's just not going to take any chances with that, with the way he sees pitch count and arm strain and how he feels about it. And, you know, you certainly hope that that can become a factor, that Jaime pitches well enough to be in that situation. And maybe more importantly, maybe a bigger factor tonight, that an untested infield plays good enough defense to keep the starter on the mound. There are some really talented athletes who can play tremendous defense that are going to be on the diamond tonight, but you're going to have a lot of guys in positions and on a stage and under pressure that maybe they've never felt before. So I think that's one of those questions that you really can't have an answer to until the game is played. And thank goodness tonight that first game is played with a beautiful weather weekend, some of the best opening weekend weather I can remember in, you know, a couple decades. And hopefully the crowd will correspond. I mean, this team won a Mountain West championship for the Valley last year with a bunch of local players. And, you know, hopefully that means something. And even though it's Valentine's night, that people will be here and enjoy a great dinner at the ballpark with your Valentine. And like I said, wear pink, you get in free. So I know there are plenty of guys out there who aren't afraid to wear pink tonight and take their Valentine to the ballpark and enjoy some great Pardini's catering.
Yeah, no doubt. Great bet and ball sports on both sides of Cedar tonight. Paul, as I let you go, of course, basketball tomorrow. You and I will talk probably on Tuesday of the week coming up instead of Monday. And I get to finally give you a bad time about AIDS for the first time in our long friendship. And I can say it this way. You and I have been talking on a weekly basis about baseball for so long. You've gone from a guy who was the voice of the baseball program when you were about the same age as some of the players. Now, how does it feel to be an old hand and an old man around these young guys? Oh, this feels so good to ask you that. Go ahead and respond.
Thank you, Tony.
Don't you dare. Yeah, don't you dare throw the fastball at my chin. I deserve it, and I'm certainly hanging over the plate right now for one. Be kind, my friend.
You know, when people ask me sometimes, well, how long you been doing the ball games? You know, and my answer, it's not a straightforward answer because of, you know, when the great Bill Woodward, you know, finished up his tenure as the voice of the Dogs, he did football that year, but not basketball. So I have one more basketball season than football. And of course, I've got a lot more baseball. And yes, I did do a double take when I saw that tonight starts my 20th season at the mic as the guy who gets to tell you that story. So, yeah, that is kind of crazy. That means I was 23 when I started, and they probably were a couple players 23. And maybe that's why I still get along with those guys from that first team I called. I don't know. But, yeah, there are definitely some people out there young enough for me to be their father. And that is kind of a revolutionary and surreal thought. But I just enjoy it. I think you know this, Tony. Being around that kind of stuff makes you feel young. You see their enthusiasm. You know the potential of the future is really limitless. And I see that in Mike Batesel, too. I mean, it's hard for me to remember the guy who came in here 18 years ago. But I think he acts just about as youthfully now as far as his energy, his exuberance, his love for the game as he did then. I'm sure he'll tell you there are a lot of things he's learned and he's a lot wiser now. But that youthful exuberance hasn't changed one bit, and I think that's why he's had so much success.
All I know is tell him that everything that you just said is true, except he has to learn to give up his allegiance to the Angels. It's not a good thing. Tell him that I said it firsthand, that they're going down, and they're going down hard this year. That's all I can mention, because that has been an ongoing battle since that unfortunate 2002 occurrence that we both are living down. All right, Paul, listen, have a great one. And I will tell you, as a guy who was calling games back in the 70s, which is a terrible admission, yes, you are old enough to be their father, and I'm old enough to be your father, so I should not have thrown the first pitch at you, because I know you can fire one under the chin anytime you want verbally to be on air, and I have no defense. I just wanted to throw it out there to start the season. How about that?
Well, you just reminded me that I need to connect with your son, Dante, and make sure that that he lets me be the first to talk to you when you become a grandfather, and then we'll finally complete this conversation.
Yeah, he is somewhere in Southeast Asia. He just left Guam. That's all I know. Okay, I find out every once in a while. I talk to him, and he says, I cannot tell you where I'm at, Dad. And I said, hey, it was just like high school. I'll talk to you later, Paul. Take care, my friend. I'll see you. Have
all
a
right,
great
Graham,
one tonight.
Keep it real.
Thank you. I'll see you. All right, guys. Paul Leffler again tonight. Baseball, 5:30, the pre, 6 o'clock, Irvine Inn, as they start a series this weekend at home, the Bulldogs do. And on the other side of Cedar, the kickoff classic already underway, the Invitational next week. I mentioned they started softball play at 9 o'clock this morning. Couldn't have asked for better weather. Fresno State gets started at 5 o'clock with Cal Poly. They play Fordham at 7:30. Hey, Fordham has to be very happy to be out of the East Coast right now because it is cold and out here. And for the Bulldogs and Linda Garza's team, they have a chance to get a great start at home after a very competitive weekend, a great tournament in Florida. So two home tournaments coming up. And again, Matt will have play-by-play on 790, 5 o'clock today, Paul 5:30 on 940. We'll take a break, come back with Jackson Moore. I want to talk Bulldog football. And then Marcus will be in at 3 o'clock today. CG is down in Southern California with his daughters as they are in competition down there. So we'll have Marcus in the email role. But right now, let's take a break, come back with Jackson, talk more Bulldog football and basketball in addition to baseball right after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Bulldog hours on a Friday until 4 o'clock, and then Nick and Nick will come up with the zone 4 to 5:30 today, and then Paul, who we just talked to, will have the pregame for you as Fresno State baseball gets started. UC Irvine in. Irvine, always a very good team, and that'll be the first of three over the weekend. Also, basketball tomorrow. Paul and Q will have that for you as Utah State is in. Bulldogs are home both tomorrow and then midweek against Air Force before back on the road and wrapping things up in short order in conference as they have the opportunity to maybe get to the 7 seed. They're not going to get to the 6 seed unless UNLV falls completely apart, and that would mean the Rebels would have to lose all 5 remaining games. They have a very tough schedule, UNLV does, and the Bulldogs would have to win their remaining 4, so that's a real long shot. So it looks like more than likely the 8-9, they might be able to get to the 7 if New Mexico falters. If they're the 8-9, they're going to play the earliest game that you can play on Wednesday, 11 o'clock in the morning at the start of March. And speaking of that start of March, on March 2nd, that Monday, we know that the Fresno State women's team will play the winner of the 8-9 game, which will take place to Thomas and Mack on Sunday, March 1st, as the women start a little bit earlier than the men in regard to that first week in March, which is an earlier start than we've had before for the conference tourney. So we'll talk a lot about that as we lead up through the last couple of weeks and pay close attention to whether the women can continue undefeated in conference play as they're on the road, as the men are at home, of course. All right, guys, a chance right now to talk to our good friend Jackson Moore, barkboard.com, and we'll get you caught up on other things going on at Fresno State in addition to the bat and ball sports. Jackson, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
Doing just fine, Jackson. I'm really feeling old because Paul and I were just having a good time about the slight age difference we have. Very slight, okay? 20 years. But then I hear the Lester Burger mentioned in the Donald P. Dick commercial just a moment ago, and there was a Lester Burger right adjacent, right across Clinton Avenue from McLean, where I grew up, and all I can think of is the old Al Radka commercials. Let us eat it. That was part of the Lester Burger gig. Probably, I don't think you and I ever hung out at Lester Burger back in the early 70s. Am I right about that, Jackson?
Yeah, I can't say I've ever had a Lester Burger.
Okay. Well, there was more than one location. There was one right by Fresno State, too. So, but again, you probably were not around in the 70s. This is my hunch. If you are, you are the most youthful-looking guy I've seen. Okay, that's for sure. Whatever you're doing, it's working out. All right, I want to grab one of the emails here quickly from the king of Henderson, Nevada, our good buddy Rob. He asked about the schedule coming out for the Mountain West in football, Jackson. I know we've talked about it over the years. There's a multiplicity of release times because you have the schedule for the conference, then the dates, and then all of that stuff, and then TV starts to jockey things around. Where are we with the initial schedule coming out from the conference? We know who the Bulldogs are going to play in conference by rotation, but as far as the specifics of when, we don't have that yet. When will we have it?
Yeah, you mentioned all the complications that go into such a thing, and then this year you have to consider they just finished the TV contract about a month ago now, and that's
right.
Something that, in, like last year, for example, they actually had one of the earliest schedule releases in early February around National Signing Day. This year they had to get rid of all that contract issues and get everything pinned down, what TV stations they were even going to have to figure out, and then once you get it done, you've got the marquee team of that contract protesting, and you've got to cater all their games to Fox and CBS Sports and all that coming up. So the short answer is it looks like mid-March, which is actually kind of typical for the Mountain West. Again, last year they got it out way earlier, but it looks like after all this, the TV agreements and everything, they're finally getting it done, and they'll have that first release in March, and then a few more tinkers to it with the Fridays and the Thursdays and all that in the weeks to follow.
Yeah, we have this step ladder approach from, as you're mentioning, from Fox to CBS Sports Network to AT&T Sportsnet to all that other I'm going to be careful how I phrase that other stuff, meaning the internet stuff, okay? I have some different words for what we have seen over the internet over the years, though it's getting better, I'll tell you that. And like I said, we know we're in the second year of this crossover, so it is going to be the teams the Bulldogs played. Naturally, we know in divisional play, whoever was here last year, the Bulldogs will be on the road there, and whoever was on the road for Fresno State will be home. And we also know the same applies for the crossovers to the Mountain. Jackson, as far as football goes, though, an advantage to avoid Boise in Wyoming, or is it something where you say, okay, this last year, that was a good idea, though it didn't work out so well. The Bulldogs only got one of the three in the crossover. Or do you say, other than Boise State, you're just not sure whether it's good or not missing Wyoming? Can you be sure they're going to be as good next year as they were this year?
Well, as far as competition goes, it's nice not to see Boise State. As far as a home game, it would have been pretty neat to have the Broncos on the schedule in a year where just Idaho State and New Mexico State are coming to town for the non-conference. But, you know, at the same time, the way Air Force rolled over the Bulldogs and continued for the next, I believe, 7 weeks after that to win each game and then a bowl game, the Falcons are not going to be an easy task. But, I mean, just like everyone else, they're going to have some turnover. But for your one home game and cross-divisional play, that's going to be a pretty tough one, even if it's not Boise State. So definitely pros and cons. Have to go to Colorado State and Utah State. It'll be interesting because the Bulldogs have two non-conference games in October. Will they have to go to one of those teams in some cold weather situations late in October or early November? So there's going to be, you know, it might be a little bit too early to say, but ultimately, if you can avoid Boise State, unless it's a conference championship game, then that's obviously a plus.
And, of course, the in-state rivalries will be in town this year. And would your guess be, Jackson, that the conference will make every effort to put, once again, San Jose State and San Diego State as late in the year as possible? Is that your hunch?
Yeah, I think you know, ever since there was that debacle with Fresno State and Boise State playing in the season finale and then the conference championship right after, San Jose State's been the last opponent for the last 2 years, and they were actually the last opponent the year before that, too. So I think they're going to try to make that an annual thing, and then we've seen San Diego State played about as close as possible to that game as well. So I would expect to see that continue, and I think across the board to keep interdivisional games those last couple of weeks of conference to avoid any sort of rematch from 1 week to the next like we saw back in 2017.
Yeah, that has been a great motivation, and they did at least clear that up, though. There's still hard feelings, as you know, about what happened. But it'll work out, and the last time in Boise it worked out pretty well anyway. So we'll see how it plays out, and we'll keep Rob and everybody else apprised as things roll through. On the topic of football, where are we at with, for instance, Hornbeek and Fresno State, three-star kid out of Memorial, another local kid. What about it? A good shot or not?
Yeah, you know, he was brought to Memorial from Chowchilla, so he's definitely got Valley roots. He's got that the small-town roots even for the Valley.
Well, Cam ought to be able to usher him here, don't you think? Don't you think if Orrell can't do that, it's a great failure on Cam's part? I'm just wondering.
That should be the case. And you know,
I
Fresno
would
State got a
think,
really good
yes.
Fresno State got a really good head start because I believe it was Coach Tedford that was actually at their game watching Mac Delano, who signs up the Bulldogs, and
right.
Hornbeek ran in the game-winning touchdown, and he got the offer from the Bulldogs just, I think, the next day. Imagine that, right? So that was his first offer. But since then, he's directed in quite a few others. Utah, Cal, Colorado, and UCLA have all offered. And it was funny because I interviewed him when his only offer was Fresno State, and he said no matter what, the Bulldogs were going to be one of those top schools, no matter who else comes into the picture. And I got to press him on that quote pretty soon after with all these new offers, and he's sticking by it. But when you have a coaching turnover like Fresno State has, there is a lot of loss of communication. You know, Jamie Christian was clearly the guy as a running backs coach recruiting him, who's no longer here. So there are going to have to be some new relationships developed there. But as far as, you know, you have local recruits that just don't quite look Fresno State's way when they have some other offers. But Hornbeek is one that sounds genuinely interested in what the Bulldogs have to offer as the hometown team.
You're right about trying to establish ties, but I think we're both in agreement, Jackson, that Lee Marks does carry a great deal of credibility, not only as an assistant coach and a good one, but someone who had great success as a running back in the league. That's got to help, right? I mean, there's no doubt he will right away develop that relationship, I would think, with anybody he talks to because of his own personal credibility at that position.
Absolutely, and even just the recent history, you throw out the names Jeremy McNichols and Alexander Madison, that's going to get some ears perked for recruits out there. If you're a running back at the high school level, those are some names that you know. Definitely Madison, the way that he's finished his career with Boise State and started it with the Minnesota Vikings in the NFL.
Yeah, he was a huge factor, as we saw later in his career. And in a way, it seemed like he came from out of nowhere, but he is a really, really solid back. And Lee Marks was that as well when he played in the earlier 2000s. Now, first of all, I'm going to find out if Cam is listening because there's going to be an email or a phone call very shortly. Just throw it out there. Just kidding, Cam. I haven't talked to you in a month or so, you know, since the college football season ended. So I thought I would do what I always do, Jackson, throw an unfair shot out there and see what's going on, right? You're familiar with that. You know how this show works by now. All right. Anything else football-wise we need to know as we, you know, it's just so fascinating to me that for all these years up until the early signing period, we were still in the backwash of what would happen the first Wednesday in February. Jackson, it's not just Fresno State. It's across the country. It's just been usurped exponentially, right, by the December early signing period. February just isn't the same anymore, is it?
Yeah, you know, especially at Fresno State, Coach Tedford was very you know, he was very careful about how he used the scholarships, and he wanted to get most of it done. It seemed like in December, as soon as that rule came about, and that's what we saw in the past few classes. And even with his interim staff after he left, they basically got the same job done with leaving Coach DeBoer only a couple scholarships to work with after December into February, which didn't seem to mind that they had gotten most of their needs addressed already. But you do look within the conference, and Hawaii was a team also with the coaching change. They signed 7. San Jose State, I believe, signed 5. And then you even got a UNLV who basically signed their whole class in February. So I think there are some teams that are still mixing it up, saving some scholarships for February. And there are some teams by necessity that do have to have that national signing day, the traditional one, as their big day. But if you've got continuity within your coaching staff and you're able to recruit the players that you want, you should get most of it done in December, as we've seen throughout the Pac-12 and through some of the Mountain West schools.
Yeah, you bring up Teddy. I'm just curious here. I know that that Jeff is recuperating now. Bob Quatta did the nice piece in the B, and like I said, we've known Jeff a long time. He's a great friend, and independent of whether he coaches again or not, I just hope that he is able now to have a much more full and comfortable day-to-day experience, and I hope everything in recovery goes great and everything they hope for with the surgery does indeed take place as the months unfold. That having been said, do you know, does he spend some time talking with DeBoer? I'm sure they do on occasion, but any idea how involved Jeff is right now, just helping Kalen through the transition?
And that I'm not entirely sure, Tony, and just with the the scheduling, the timing with Coach Tedford having his procedure just recently, I have to imagine that even if it is going to be pretty substantial communication, that it probably hasn't been what it will be over the past few weeks. But I do anticipate that he'll be around, definitely. And even Coach Hill, I've seen him with the staff or at the basketball game. He was hanging out with Coach DeBoer. I saw one of the previous games. So, and that was one thing Coach DeBoer mentioned to me the day that he was introduced as the head coach. One thing that stood out to him was that Pat was in their first coaches meeting to kind of set the tone for what Fresno State football is all about. So I'm sure he's going to be leaning on those two guys as much as they're welcome to give their opinions and try to give their bit of influence to his the way that he takes his team in his direction too.
Well, it's great that you have former coaches of that stature who are both in town still. You know, it's a real unique kind of situation. It doesn't happen everywhere, that's for sure. All right, Jackson, as far as the spring festivities, I don't know if the players feel that way about the 15 practices right in the middle of the semester. March 16th, so are we going to go then 2 weeks break for Easter break and then two after that? Is that the plan, weather permitting?
Yeah, I believe that's going to be the case, and that extends it a little bit. And they are starting relatively later than most schools, so I mean, with all the injuries they had last season, I believe they're hoping they'll get a couple extra guys ready by then by starting a few weeks later than others. And by extending it even further out, maybe they'll get a few more players in. I mean, clearly you're going to have guys that went through surgeries, and it just doesn't matter. They're not going to be good until the summertime or so. But the minor things, you hope to have as many of your guys around and get as much work in with them as possible, because they are going to be down in numbers, particularly on the offensive line, where they suffered a lot of injuries over the last season. So definitely later, a longer period than most other schools in this area, but it should play to their advantage.
Of course, Easter is on, what, the 12th, I believe, 12th or 13th, one of the two there. So it means that the break will be that week prior. So when you look at that, I guess, Jackson, it would coincide, depending upon how they work those initial practices, to have it break right at the time so that the guys can get away and get home or take care of other studies and everything. So we'll see how, and DeBoer's been through it before, so obviously they've got it scoped out pretty well. And so we were talking earlier, as much as we want to see things go off on time, we also wouldn't mind seeing some rain at some point again. So, you know, I'm not so sure that's what the coaches want, but it might very well be that a little well-timed rain wouldn't hurt anybody these days. Now, as we move to basketball, I want to ask you here about what you saw of this team being able to build a little bit of momentum in San Jose. I mean, look, it wasn't easy, but it was a win. Jackson, is it an 8-9 lock-in, in your opinion, for sure, or with New Mexico being two games up in the loss column but having a tough schedule and one extra game to play, any possibility the Bulldogs get to 7? They're not going to fall to 10, okay? That's not going to happen because they have the tiebreak over San Jose State. So Wyoming and San Jose State or Air Force, any combination there, you're going to have your 11 and 10. So if the Bulldogs are 8-9, we know if they win that first game, they're going to see San Diego State. Is there a chance, in your opinion, a decent one, they can get to 7, or is that asking too much?
I think there is a chance. It's probably unlikely, but, I mean, New Mexico does only have one more win than Fresno State. They've got to go to Boise. They've got Nevada and Utah State at home. UNLV is not going to be an easy one either, and it's just frankly they're not playing very well. They've lost four out of the last five. It's like 7 out of 8, I think, if you go back even further. So definitely a downward trend since they've had a lot of personnel issues, players being dismissed, suspended. I mean, right. That was a team when they played Fresno State earlier in the conference slate. I thought they were possibly the most talented team in the whole conference on an individual player-by-player basis, and now they just have struggled across the board. So either way, Bulldogs are going to see an Air Force or San Jose State on day one. But if you can get out of that 8-9 game and avoid San Diego State, I mean, whoever the second or third seed, however high you can get, it's not going to be relatively easy for a Fresno State, but at least it wouldn't be the Aztecs.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And one of the things, Jackson, that we probably have not made, or at least I have not made enough of a point about, is in the major conferences, when you have a team, a Duke or a North Carolina or a traditional power, whoever it might be, and they're having the kind of year San Diego State is having, on the one hand, you have coaches that would like to continue a perfect streak, obviously, but on the other, they know that a loss in the conference tournament is not going to affect their seeding. So sometimes their team loses a little bit of an edge because they're looking more toward that next week after the conference tourney about the NCAAs when you're in single elimination. I think the converse applies with San Diego State, Jackson. I think they're well aware that they are playing for a very important number one seed, particularly if it's one that's out west. We'll see if it's they or Gonzaga that gets the one that heads to Los Angeles. Because of that, I would guess, Jackson, you're going to see a fully involved San Diego State team, particularly if they're still undefeated in conference play, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And, you know, the version that Fresno State saw earlier in the season, both games of them, was kind of the more traditional, low-scoring, defense-first San Diego State team. And you look at the way they've rolled the last four games, 80 or more points in each of them. That's not something you usually think of when you think of San Diego State and the way they've been so successful over the past decade plus. But those are usually the teams you're a little more afraid of in a tournament setting, because you get a team that gets hot and has offensive firepower and they can run you out of the gym. Nevada was a good example a couple years back, where I believe Fresno State was up at halftime and they went on some absurd 20-2 run and knocked the Bulldogs right out of that. So, you know, usually San Diego State's not that kind of team, but it looks like they're starting to get there. And I mean, that just makes them even more dangerous because they still have that defense. So a team that Fresno State feels like they competed with pretty hard twice in the season is now becoming your more traditional power team that's just rolling teams over. Utah State, they beat by 12. They've won the other three of their last four games by, I believe, 20-plus points, just or at least 15. I mean, they're not one that you want to see right now.
And they have a couple of tough ones. They're remaining four on the road. They've got a game at Boise State coming up this weekend and also one at Nevada. So they may not be undefeated going into that conference tournament. If they are, they're going to be really, really difficult to handle. Either way, they're going to be tough, which is a way of saying if you can get to seven and get out of their bracket, that would not be a bad idea. All right, real quickly here, Bat and Ball Sports. I talked to Matt yesterday because he'll have softball tonight on 790 at 5 o'clock. And, of course, just talked to Paul about the baseball team. Jackson, quick thoughts on either side of Cedar for this weekend? Promise for both that they're going to be in postseason play and make a run? How you view this?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the expectation around here, even though it hasn't happened as frequently as of late. But the baseball team, with their regional performance last year, I think has got people a lot more excited about the program. Even earlier in that season, a lot of people, I think, were starting to dread the series of seasons that Fresno State had, and suddenly they kicked it into another gear there towards the end of the year. So you definitely hope to see them get off to a good start. And then softball-wise, a pretty encouraging start to their season last weekend, getting three solid wins and playing two top 20 teams, very tough. They don't quite have a Florida or a Michigan in the kickoff classic this weekend, so you hope that they can have even more wins and get some victories against teams like Cal and St. Mary's that would certainly be solid at this time of year.
And then finally, women's basketball team still undefeated in conference play. They're on the road, of course, in the reciprocal schedules, and the men are at home. Jackson, I don't think they're going to have trouble on the road. They could, but I think they're going to be okay in this road trip. But I will ask you, can this team go into Las Vegas, assuming they have to win the whole thing, because I think they do to make the NCAA. I hope I'm wrong. I hope there's an at-large somewhere as a safety net, but that has not been the case in this conference in the recent past. Can they get away with these close games, or will it bite them eventually? What's your view about this? And look, they've won a couple by 20 as of late, but what happened the other day against San Jose State has happened a number of times. Can they do this high wire act and get away with it all the way through the conference tournament, or they have to be more dominant?
Yeah, it definitely makes you nervous. And San Jose State, I mean, that was a game that if their leading scorer does anything more than what she did that night, the Spartans probably get out of there with the win. But Fresno State, on the other hand, I mean, they've just been so resilient. They've won, obviously, every game to this point. And if you're going to ask me to take Fresno State or the field in the tournament, I would definitely take them, just as I would take a San Diego State on the men's side. But it does make you nervous. It wasn't just Wednesday night. I mean, it was an awesome scene at Save Mart Center. There was a huge crowd.
Right.
Just a thrilling victory at the very end. It was just an awesome experience, I think, for everyone there in red or green in that case. But
right, yeah, because they were in the Faith yeah. Valley. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that needs explanation a little bit yeah. if people weren't yeah. there.
Right. Well, yeah, Pride of the Valley night with the green uniforms. But you know, the Mountain West is not having a banner year otherwise besides them. And at the same time, there's still about four or five teams that they think that they could probably trip up Fresno State on a given night. So I think the good thing that's working in the Bulldogs' favor, though, is that they're so balanced and they can afford to have one or two players have an off night and others pick themselves up. I mean, they've got three of the top four scorers in the conference. So the way that they've played out has been a little nerve-wracking at times, but they do have the pieces to avoid that kind of disastrous loss in the tournament that could derail all the wins that they've picked up in the regular season, unfortunately.
Well, I hope they have a great senior night as they come back home. And, again, we know this for sure. On Monday, March 2nd, the Bulldogs will definitely play at noon in Las Vegas against the winner of the 8-9 game, which will take place on Sunday, March 1st. So if you're going to the tournament for the men, get there a couple days early and watch the women on Monday, and hopefully they'll go right through Monday, Tuesday, and win the whole thing on Wednesday. We'll see. The men will get started on Wednesday for sure. Jackson, appreciate it, my friend. I will talk to you next week. Have a great one. Take care.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys. Jackson Moore, barkboard.com. We'll take a break. Wrap up Hour 1 on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. Hour 2 of the Bulldog Hours on a Friday. Captain Joe alongside here until 4 o'clock, and then Nick and Nick will take over with the zone until 5:30 today. And then Paul, who we just talked to in the 2 o'clock hour, will come up. Bulldog baseball gets started tonight. UCU riding in at Biden-Bennett. It should be a terrific evening for baseball, as is the case for softball across the street. They're already underway with the kickoff classic. They got underway at 9 o'clock this morning with Cal playing, as there are a group of teams here. Fresno State, Fordham is in, Cal Poly is in, etc. Fresno State will not get started until 5 o'clock, but they'll have a doubleheader. They'll play Cal Poly first at 5, and then at 7:30, Fordham and the Bulldogs will do battle. Teams play across the weekend. We'll have the Fresno State game for you at 5 o'clock with our good friend Matt Norville, who was with us yesterday on 790. So 790 at 5 for softball, 5:30 on 940 for baseball. Tomorrow, 6:15, Paul and Coach Q will have the tip-off show, the pre at 6:30 in Fresno State and Utah State at Save Mart Center at 7 o'clock. The basketball team for the women undefeated earlier in the day, they will play in Logan, and we'll talk all about it on Tuesday of next week. We are off on Monday for President's Day, but back to normal on Tuesday with this show at 2 o'clock, and then CRISPR back on Tuesday at 3, and CG is down in Los Angeles right now with his daughters who are in competition, so we hope everything is going well there. And because of that, Marcus, who is normally with us in the 2 o'clock hour, will be with us right now to answer emails at tdad1@att.net. TDAD, the number one at ATT.net. So we bring up the Culver City Madman, the King of Fantasy at NFL Network and NFL.com, our longtime friend, Sir Marcus Grant. Em, how you doing?
You know, I know we've been doing this for a while, but I'm still not used to college baseball getting started in mid-February. I think I'm still used to the late January, early February starts for it.
Yeah, you know, this is what's interesting, what you just said. If I was just bringing up to Paul last hour, as you know, the NBA All-Star Game was in Chicago this weekend. It was 2 degrees this morning in Chicago. So when you said not used to it, people in the Midwest and East are going, yeah, you mean April, right? And you're saying this is a late start. That's what's fascinating. You're absolutely right. Normally, the season would start in January. That's why there are so many Major League Baseball players that come out of California, Texas, and Florida, right? Because you can play. Hey, when the Mountain West first brought Fresno State in as the WAC, right, back in the start of the 90s, Bulldogs would be playing in January, and BYU would be getting around to it in, like, April. They would come in here, and they'd be 0-2 on the season in April because of the weather issues. So I assume it is a glorious day down in SoCal as well, right?
Yes. You know, upper 60s and not a cloud to be seen. Yeah, things are okay here.
Yeah, that's same here, and it'll be in the 70s over the weekend, and then we're going to get a little bit of a system. Though, Emmer, we all need rain again, and I told you this. When people said the drought was over, they just weren't paying attention, were they? Because, you know, I got a heavy investment in a TIF Green Bermuda lawn out here, okay, that's overlaid with rye. I need a chance to water this thing once in a while. Isn't that the priority, what your lawn looks like right now, or do I just take the spray paint out? Is that how it works? I'm just curious.
That is the next step, I think, is just to spray paint it green and tell everybody how great your lawn is.
I'll tell you, in Santa Barbara, that's what happened that one year, you know, those pricey homes. Here's an amazing comment. There are pricey homes in Santa Barbara. You aware of that? they did. They had some guy whose full-time
Someone
gig was going.
Over that.
Yeah, so the guy had a full-time gig, some gardener. He said, hey, since I can't mow lawns because nobody's growing them right now, he got the spray paint out and started spray painting lawns, and he had a pretty good business throughout Southern California. It went away the last few years, unfortunately, and might be coming back. All right, tdad1@att.net, TDAD, the number one at att.net. We'll go over emails throughout the hour. Again, CG down in Southern California. We'll get back to normal next week, and Marcus will be in the 2 o'clock hour instead of the 3, but I appreciate you jumping in. Em, on your day off. By the way, how's little Em doing these days?
He's great. He's pulling up. He is nearly walking, which means I have to keep my head on a swivel going forward.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You hear a noise, you go, oh, no. Two things. You say, number one, I hope he's okay. And number two, I hope I'm not blamed if he's not. Okay, that's how it works. It's an equal thought, right? It's, okay, number one, he's got to be okay. And number two, Chiefy Weefy is going to be very upset if I hadn't been paying attention. So that's the priority. I know you know that already. And then they can grow up when they're in their 20s and do what they're doing to me right now. Okay, so look forward to that. More sleepless nights now than even before. At least before you had a modicum of control. Now you just hope when the phone rings it's not bad news. That's sort of how it works, right? By the way, our good friend Gary up in Atwater, who was a fine pitcher himself. Yeah, Gary, you're right about the pitching staff. I didn't get a chance to address it with Paul, but this pitching staff for Fresno State, they are very good at staying within themselves and not getting out of the ability to fight through adversity. And that's why I asked him about Larson and what happened at Palo Alto, whether there's going to be a hangover, because that was a very bad time to have that outing. Wasn't all on him. Certainly the Bulldogs had the lead going into that inning, and even afterward, after the home run, they were only two down with four innings to go, and they could not come back against Beck. So it wasn't on Larson, but I am interested, Gary, to see how he responds this year coming around the bend, because he is going to be a key reliever with Arias and Carvajal at the top of the rotation now. And again, we'll start that tonight. All right, Marcus, I would love to ignore this first email, but for fear that it might end up with you anyway, I better address it, okay? Because I get an email from the man. He said, in parentheses, you know who I am, Tony. I was in the media for a number of years and traveled with you, okay? I think he means at the same place. I don't recall traveling with anybody but my lovely wife. That's it. And that's my story, Evan. I'm sticking to it. On Valentine's Day, I'm really sticking to it. He went on, the man went on to say, you know, you give Marcus a bad time about what happened in Bakersfield, and again, parenthetically, and justifiably so, which I'm fully in support of that. I'm not going to repeat it one more time, but Marcus had an issue in Bakersfield that has come up from time to time, like every other week, and he was waiting for a post-game show after a Valley Championship game, and it was very cold, and he was concerned that the coach wasn't going to arrive on time. And he said a couple of things about his own personal situation, had nothing to do with the coach, that inadvertently got out over the air. And That's all I'm going to say about it. Gino and the guys in the South Valley know about it. And I bring it up because it's fun to bring it up, in all honesty. Okay. So here's what the man said. He said, you know, you, talking about me, talking yesterday to Matt about softball and Sunnyvale. And, yes, I did bring up the fact that for all those years I would go with softball and they would get very close to a national championship and lose, including in that run from 87 all the way to 98, 2 years in Sunnyvale where they had it at a sports complex, Twin Creeks, that wasn't really set up for softball. This is important to address this email because the man said, I want you to explain the pool table incident. Now, Marcus, I think I brought this up with you before, or have I not?
Perhaps refresh my memory.
Okay. All right. Here's what happened. And it's not as bad as your situation. I'm going to make this clear right now. This Twin Creek Sports Complex in Sunnyvale, and we got there in 1988, and it was clear that it wasn't set up for a national championship. It had been softball when it first got started under the NCAA umbrella. They were in Omaha the week before the men had, and still do have, of course, their national championship. The weather was terrible, and they were dwarfed. That was dwarfed by the coverage of the College World Series and its long tradition then at the original Rosenblatt. So they decided they were going to move it. It was open to bid. Gentlemen in Sunnyvale bid for 88 and 89, okay? And it was great because five of the eight teams were West Coast teams. It seemed to be a perfect fit, except, A, the guy didn't want to spend any money, so he had lights. Marcus, honestly, we went to do a telecast, a simulcast, the first game against Texas A&M, and we couldn't even see. And we said, would you like to turn the lights up? And he said, would you like to pay the bill? This is what he said. This is the host of the national championship didn't want to turn the lights up to full candle because he didn't want to spend the money. When we got there, what we found out was that the broadcast area, which was really part of the offices that were above the gaming area, was not designed for media, were three flights of stairs up. Okay, I had a color person, a very nice young man who was a college student who had cerebral palsy, so he was in a wheelchair. Great young man. I haven't talked to him in years. I hope everything has gone well for him. But there was no way in the world, Marcus, he was going to be able to get up those stairs, obviously. So, this is the old weightlifting days, right? So, mm-hmm. I had the remote unit in one hand and my color man tucked under my other arm, and I would carry my color man up the stairs. This went on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Nobody said anything to me about it, but I would get strange looks, and I almost said, hey, you know what? This young man is doing everything he can right now to be as great a color man as he can be, and you don't need to be looking at him. I was offended by what I was seeing, right? Because mm-hmm. I thought it was looking askance about someone who had a handicap. And, you know, hey, Marcus, I had a leg brace on as a kid because of a hip situation I was born with. And I wasn't very appreciative of having people look at this young man that way. Okay. We get to Sunday, the final day, and we're upstairs in the media area where they're doing the interviews, right, the press conferences. Mm-hmm. And it dawns on me on the last day that the whole time we were doing this, there was a pool table up there. Okay? Now, okay. I had seen this thing from Wednesday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the epiphany hits me. And I think to ask, I said, how in the world did you get the pool table up here? And they said, the freight elevator. There was an elevator there the whole time. That's the reason people were looking askance, was because they were staring at me and saying, you imbecile, you are aware there is an elevator that goes up there, right? So you are carrying your colored person up the flight of stairs and down completely unnecessarily. Okay. What my response to this was to carry my color man right back down the stairs the last time, because I was not going to admit to anybody that I was stupid enough to have not noticed that pool table, which was there the entire time. It wasn't hidden by a tablecloth or something. So, yes, the man, it was a foolish, ridiculous thing to do. Okay, and I'm glad you're getting a kick out of it, Marcus, because it was a misstep and then some. But still not as bad as what you did on the air. Right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, because yours wasn't actually on the air.
Yeah, you're right. It was just 5 days of people. I'm going to say this in fairness to me, and we're going to get away from this, all right? Shouldn't somebody have said something to me, or do you think they were just getting a kick out of me being an absolute fool about nobody ever answered that question about why in the world someone didn't come up and say, hey, by the way, like maybe on Thursday, there is a freight element. Maybe they said, you know what, if this guy is dumb enough to ignore that pool table, then he gets what he deserves, right? So anyway, that's enough of that. And the young man, his name was Todd. He was a really outstanding color person who had done a bunch of Fresno State games, softball games, earlier in the year there at the Diamond. And so it was a really great weekend. And by the way, the Bulldogs came within one line drive or a looping liner to a left field and beating UCLA. That was a start, Marcus, of those near misses year after year, you know, for the team. They had won the first game against UCLA. They had to win two, and they had a chance the second one. There was a looper to right center field. If it would have fallen, they would have tied the game, and somebody came across from right field to just grab it out of the air just in time, and that started that 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, 94, 97 routine, all of those in the 90s in Oklahoma before they broke through in 98. So it ended up okay in 98, but it was a frustrating time for a lot of people. All right, Em, let's get to the other emails here. Ronald asked about the Myles Garrett situation again and Mason Rudolph. You and I talked about it at the time. I don't know. You don't know the truth about this, but I will ask you something. And Ronald asked if we could explain this one more time because we brought up Fox being the telecaster for that game. And nobody has better on-field sound, as you know, than Fox. Working at NFL Network and NFL.com, do you believe that Fox knows the truth in this thing and the league has asked them not to disclose it? Or is it a case where if there is no evidence of it on the audio there, that it doesn't mean it wasn't said? I guess what I'm saying is, can you prove a negative about this? In other words, if it were said, they could pick it up, but is there a possibility that it could have been said and they didn't pick it up on that great audio they have there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely a possibility.
We wouldn't have heard it over the air. Let me make this clear. What we're talking about, you know, if anybody's ever listened to the Fox telecast, you know there's a lot of muting of the sound, and that is in that quick delay they have of pulling stuff out. So they might have had it at the offices, yay or nay.
I would think that, you know, if they had it, and look, I don't think, you know, if whatever may or may not have been said, I don't think it's the thing that the league or Fox would ever purposely put out there, but you wonder whether or not something would leak. I tend to believe that at this point, it's one of those things that if whatever was said, if something was said, the only people who know about it were the people who were there. Whatever Mason Rudolph or Myles Garrett said or heard, it may kind of start and end with them. And I don't know that it's going to be something that the rest of us are ever going to know. It's going to be kind of a he said, he said thing between Garrett and Rudolph, I think, going forward.
Does it damn both of them long term? With Garrett, no matter what he did, and we talked about it at the time, but what he did, he may very well be 100% accurate and honest about this. It still makes it look like revisionist history, and for Mason Rudolph, does it unfairly, or fairly, but we don't know, cast aspersion upon his character?
Yeah, I mean, I think for Mason Rudolph, it's going to be a thing that sticks with him. And I think, I guess to some extent, for Myles Garrett, this may stick with him. I think the difference between Garrett and Rudolph is that Garrett, I think, is positioned to have a longer, more successful NFL career. You know, as long as he plays up to his talent potential, he's going to be the guy that has a much brighter career than Mason Rudolph. And if there's one thing we have learned throughout the years, it is that, you know, having talent and being productive in professional sports erases a whole lot of things. I mean, if Mason Rudolph's lot in life is to be a perennial backup quarterback with a very short NFL career,
I think this is going to be a much bigger footnote on his potential playing career than it will be on Myles Garrett, if Garrett turns out long-term to be the sort of player that a lot of people anticipated he would be.
Well, look, the reason this came back up is because Garrett just had the interview with Mina Kimes that's going to be on ESPN over the weekend, I think on demand. It's on OTL and on demand, I think, on Monday. That's why it's become a cause celeb again. I will say this, Marcus, about this whole situation. In fairness to Myles Garrett, the statements that came out right after the play, and he's made it clear that it was inexcusable, and he continues to do so, and I think that's probably a very smart thing to do. You don't want to ever say it was there was a justification for it, no matter what was said to you verbally, because it was a physical response. But teammates are saying that the fact that, or at least the allegation that he didn't say it right afterward, that is not true, that he did tell people and that he did go behind closed doors right away and say it immediately, that that was the trigger, but that he did not want that to be part of this. So if all of that is the case, then I think there is more credibility toward what Myles said. Hopefully the league is in a position where people don't believe, they cover everything up, and I guess that's the bigger issue, and that is the mere fact that there are a lot of people in the public that think the league would willingly, Marcus, if they had the verifiable evidence, would hide it. Is that more of a concern to the league in the long term, that they're questioned that much about covering tracks all the time?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, obviously, yeah, they want to be, Roger Goodell's whole mantra has been protect the shield and talking about integrity and that sort of thing. But I also think that the folks in the Park Avenue office also realize that there will always be a portion of the fan base and just the general public that sort of looks at them suspiciously. You know, that always is going to believe conspiracy theories when it comes to the league. So I think it's one of those situations where if you are the NFL, you're sort of in a no-win situation, because regardless of how you handle it, people are never going to completely, you know, believe that you are being thoroughly transparent with it.
Yeah, you're right about that. And hopefully for both parties concerned, this is going to be something they can move forward from. Myles Garrett is a very intelligent guy. He's not someone with a history of this. And with Mason Rudolph, I can't comment one way or another. I've never heard anything beyond this incident with him. So hopefully both guys are going to move on, though. You're right as far as potential career. And Garrett did serve his suspension. Garrett, obviously, as a number one choice, is a guy who's much more likely to have an impact on the league on the field. All right, speaking of the NFL, ESPN, as you know, Marcus, had a story the other day about guys that need to change locales, change the scenery. Derek was on that list. We have talked about where Tom Brady might be going. What is the best thing for Derek right now, independent of the Tom Brady stuff, whether it's to Vegas or to Los Angeles or to the 49ers, for goodness sake, or down to Miami and being a part owner when he's done, or Jacksonville or Tennessee or wherever it is? Easier to say where he's not going, right, or staying in Foxborough. For Derek, what is the best thing for him right now, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think as much as I know he wants to be a Raider and wants to kind of help build the organization, I think it's at a point now where he may be better served to leave the Raider organization, you know, and where he goes, I think, is still certainly up for debate, but there are plenty of quarterback needy teams around the league. You know, I've seen a lot of speculation of, you know, maybe the Bears do something, you know, realizing that maybe Mitchell Trubisky isn't the answer. You know, we'll see what happens if they try to make a deal for an Andy Dalton or something like that. I mean, you know, but there are going to be a lot of free agents out there. I mean, I think Tom Brady ultimately will go back to New England. I think that's probably what's going to happen. But the Chargers potentially are a destination if they really have moved on from Phillip Rivers and they're not sure about Tyrod Taylor. So I think there are potential quality landing spots with you know, talent around him that he could go to. But I just do think that with the situation being in Oakland, or I guess in Las Vegas, what it is, and having a head coach and an organization that, you know, while they haven't necessarily, you know, denigrated Derek, they also haven't really reaffirmed any serious commitment to him. And I think just being in limbo like that suggests that maybe they have kind of moved on from you, and maybe it's time you move on from them.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the interesting thing about this, when Derek signed that 5-year, $125 million deal, it seemed to be, you know, such a high-dollar proposition. But, Marcus, you and I both know the minute that Pat Mahomes finishes his contract, Derek's contract is going to be highly doable. And for the Raiders right now, the hit of the cap is only going to be $5 million. So if they're going to make a move, it's now. And if it's mutually best, if what Gruden says publicly is not what he feels privately, and only Gruden knows that, this is the time, because Derek is a bargain financially right now, given what we know Mahomes is going to get. How outrageous is Mahomes' contract going to be?
Oh, it's going to be, you know, they say market setting. I mean, it will be a completely market setting contract. He was already kind of on that trajectory, and now winning a Super Bowl is going to put him over the top. So, I think there are a lot of other quarterbacks who maybe of lesser ability, though, who are sitting and watching and waiting, knowing that he will completely set the market when his contract comes due.
I know that Zach is looking at it very, very, very close. I mean, look, let's be straight about a lot of the stuff going on right now in this league. It is looking at what happens with Mahomes going forward. Jerry Jones is looking at it at the moment. That's for sure. He's looking and saying, okay, what is this going to mean as far as the baseline? I know this. In that Super Bowl, Marcus, and you and I have talked about it enough as 49er fans the last couple of weeks, I would have rather had Derek in that fourth quarter than Garoppolo in that fourth quarter because, Garoppolo can be a fine game manager. I just don't want the game on his back in the end, and he proved that, and I don't know that that's going to change. So I don't want to see Brady come and the 49ers throw it away with Garoppolo, but I would not mind at all seeing Derek Carr be the 49er quarterback, and it's not a knock on Garoppolo. I just think as long as he has a lead of substance in the fourth quarter, he's not going to kill you, but if you're asking him to get you on a final drive, and neither you or I were exactly impressed by what we saw at the end, correct?
Yeah, no, not so much.
Yeah, that's the understatement of all time. All right, one last thing football-wise before we hit the break. Then I want to come back and ask you about our beloved game of baseball and what in the world is going on here, okay? Talk about changing the very substance of the game. Isn't the new rule that pitchers have to throw blindfolded now for an inning? Isn't that what we have to do? Maybe didn't see that. I want to ask you about our buddy Benito and Reedley. This is his favorite topic. I told you he wants a show or at least a segment every week called What's Wrong with the Pac-12. Well, Benito, when Marcus is on, that's where it ends up, okay, every time. The situation at Colorado. How do you fix this, Marcus, if it's a case where the better athletes are leaving and therefore the coaches are leaving? How do you stop the bleeding? Because isn't this the, to get a job, you got to have experience. In order to have experience, you got to have a job. How do you stop this if the coaches say, I'm going to leave for the other Power 5 conferences because the players want to play there? How do you stop it?
Well, I mean, look, you talk about that circular logic there, right? I mean, some of it is you need to sign better media deals and get more exposure and generate more revenue. But in order to sign those better deals and generate that more revenue, you've got to have compelling teams, right? Which brings you back to the players and the coaches kind of staying there and helping build this thing. And so the Pac-12 has kind of gotten itself way behind in that arms race, and they're falling further behind all the time simply because they aren't able as a conference to put together enough compelling football programs right now. I mean, it's nice to have, a school like Oregon pop up and be successful every so often. But, even with USC sort of floundering around right now and no other real consistent contenders coming from the Pac-12, it gets a lot harder to try and go out and sell that. I mean, the Pac-12 signing a deal with a streaming company recently that nobody's ever heard of isn't going to go a long way toward helping this out. Meanwhile, the Big Ten, the SEC, they have money to burn at this point, and they're going to continue, I think, to try to poach. And I think even this Mel Tucker thing is sort of weird because you've got Michigan State throwing, basically a dump truck full of money at him for a guy who has a career record of 5-7. So I think in some ways it sort of shows the absurdity of college football and coaching salaries, but it also speaks to how the Pac-12 is really struggling to try to compete on a national larger level with some of those other power conferences.
which we never saw coming. We thought it was a clear, and it's there still is a clear delineation between haves and have-nots. Let's make it clear where you're going with this battle whether Boise State can get an extra $1.8 million from the Mountain West, right? And that pales in comparison to what a Washington State is getting up there in the nether regions of Pullman, Washington, right? I mean, it's not the same. But certainly within the pyramid, but the old Ricky Henderson stuff, right? What did he want his contract to be, Marcus? One more dollar than the highest paid left fielder in baseball, right? The folks in the Pac-12 aren't looking at the group of five. They're looking at what the SEC and the Big Ten, et cetera, is getting. I'm just curious, like with Bieniemy, for instance, because of all of this, and I know that they're rolling out the red carpet to have him come back to Colorado, and was a great running back there, obviously. Do you see any way he leaves the National Football League merry-go-round to put himself back in college, given what's going on right now?
You know, I go back and forth on that one because, I mean, I think there are some opportunities in college football that are not necessarily a major demotion from being in the National Football League. I don't know necessarily if Colorado is one of those jobs. If there is a pull there for him, it's as you mentioned. I mean, it is returning to his alma mater. It's returning to the place where he was a star as a player. And so maybe there's some sort of sentimentality that you know, will allow him to forego maybe a larger salary or something like that. I don't know. Maybe he feels like that is the path that you have to maybe kind of go back to the college ranks in order to move ahead and get an NFL head coaching job. So I don't know. That's what I sort of go back and forth on. And I'm not sure if going back to Boulder is a gateway to bigger and better things. And I think that's definitely one of the things he's going to have to weigh as he tries to make this decision.
All right, one last thing, and Rick had asked this. The troubles of the Pac-12, does it behoove them to look at expansion, Marcus, or is contraction a better option? Look, Utah has been competitive. Colorado has not. It has not been. You know, we've talked about the only true winners in this whole pork belly trading that has slowed down with conference affiliation are Utah and TCU because they left group of five status and went to power five status. Colorado made a lateral move, but they are having a lot of trouble. And I know that the Big 12 had disbanded kind of around them when Nebraska and everybody left. But right now, if you say the status quo isn't going to work, bigger or smaller better for the Pac-12 at the moment?
I mean, ideally, smaller probably would be, but I can't imagine a scenario. I mean, that seems like a doomsday scenario. It's like a doomsday scenario for you to contract at this point because, look, the pie is shrinking if you're the Pac-12. If you can figure out a way to share that smaller pie with fewer conference members, I think it starts to work out. But, I mean, that to me seems like the ultimate admission of defeat if you end up having to contract the conference.
Back to the Pac-8, they're going to get rid of the Arizona schools in Utah and Colorado. Or back to the Pac-6, they're going to go back that far. When you were a kid, Marcus. back to the 50s, that's where we're headed. That's always the good. When in doubt, just head back to the 50s, for goodness sake. All right, I'm going to take the break, come back. I want to get to Craig's email and Brian's about not only Cody Bellinger's comments, which I know you want to comment on, but also about the rule changes in Major League Baseball. So a rare chance for you and I as the Bat and Ball Sports get started locally at Fresno State today to talk Major League Baseball. We'll do that after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Back 3:42, Bulldog Hours until 4, and then Nick and Nick come up. The Zone 4 to 5:30 today, and then Paul will have the pregame show at 5:30 from Biden Bennett. 6 o'clock, Fresno State and UC Irvine start their series across the street. The kickoff classic for softball underway as of 9 o'clock this morning. The Bulldogs have two games beginning at 5. They have Cal Poly and then Fordham, and Matt will have those for you on 790 at 5 o'clock. So 5 o'clock on 790, 5:30 on 940, softball and baseball, and then 6:15 tomorrow, Paul and Coach Q have basketball. Utah State in Air Force in midweek, and the women's team continuing undefeated on the road at those two schools, and they'll be back home the next week. We get ready for Senior Day Wyoming, and then the conference tournament. So it's going to be a very quick turnaround because we start a week early this year, right at the start of March. So we'll have all of that for you between 9:40 and 7:90. All right, talking to our good friend Marcus Grant right now, going over email. CG is down in SoCal with his daughters in competition this weekend, and so Christopher back with us on Monday. Marcus, let's get to baseball here. Craig had asked about the rule changes. Now, you and I have about 10 minutes, and I want to get to through this and Bellinger's comments about those cheating Astros. I'm doing it so you don't have to. Okay, for you, the Giants already, I would have completely changed the format, and we would have started with this immediately. Okay, we'll try to work in a Dodger complaint here if we don't run out of time, a la Matt Damon on Jimmy Kimmel. All right, about the rule changes. Scott Van Pelt brought this up. You and I are inveterate baseball fans, and he brought it up. You have a generation coming up behind you that may not like baseball, period, the pace of the game, just the general approach of baseball as opposed to other fast-action sports. And Van Pelt's comment was, why are you changing something for a group that probably isn't going to watch or listen anyway? Is he right about this, Marcus? You are changing it. You're going to alienate the actual baseball fan with these rules. You got to throw to three hitters, all of this. And you're still not going to draw in the people that, you know, a la South Park, don't want to watch baseball anyway?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely the case. And I think, you know, I think it's the thing that every sport sort of faces. I think the NFL has done a very good job of tweaking the rules enough to try to draw in casual fans while not alienating its inveterate fans. But I think baseball right now is coming up with rule tweaks and rule changes that fundamentally potentially alter how the game is played. And I guess they're doing it to try and swing the pendulum back the other way when you know, pace of play and that sort of thing has kind of gotten off track a little bit. But I do think there's a lot of truth in that, you know, you are potentially going to hurt or alienate your current fan base to try and bring in people who may otherwise not be inclined to watch you under any circumstances.
You know, you're so right about this. I had mentioned to you, Marcus, after not being in the stands for a long time because calling games doesn't lend to being a fan again. I happened one day long ago to be in the stands, and it reminded me of why baseball is a unique sport. And that is, yeah, it was 3.5 hours, the game. As a kid, we used to love that. Our great fear was we'd drive all the way to Candlestick and it'd be done an hour and 45, and then you got to drive all the way back home, right? But what I found was what baseball lends itself to. Conversation about a variety of other things in addition to the game itself, right? That's what you hear in the stands at a baseball game. You can't do that in basketball or hockey or football. It's a different environment. That's why it's played in the summer. It's played over 162. I don't have a problem with length of games. Now, maybe it's being out here in the West where we're not dealing with World Series games starting just shy of 9 o'clock. But is it really a problem, in your opinion, the length of the game? Because it's never been a problem for me.
I don't think length of the game is the problem. And I think in that respect, I think that might be where Major League Baseball is sort of off the mark in what it's trying to do. Because, I mean, I don't know that a baseball game is any longer. In fact, I think it's probably shorter than your average NFL game. I think the issue that people have sort of mislabeled is, but yes, there's not always a lot of action, and I think some of that, though, has to do less with pace of play and more with style of play. Now that we've got, now that launch angles and that sort of thing have become part of it, and, you know, the three true outcomes, as they say, you know, where everything seems like strikeout, walk, or home run, that has sort of, I think, dulled the game a little bit. That and the multiple pitching changes, which completely slow everything down. You know, I've said for years, the one thing I would love to come back to the game that probably never will is the 100 stolen base guy. To have players run, to have teams hit and run a little bit and do different things. I don't know if that's going to come back anytime soon, but I think it completely changes the way the game is played, and I think would add some more excitement back into the game.
Tell you this, if Billy Martin were around to manage, you don't think Major League Baseball would be driven crazy by the length of games, the A's games. It would be about 4.5 hours long, I think, if he were still around. But it would be entertaining to watch Ricky, that's for sure.
And that is,
you still there, Em?
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that again? Yeah.
Yeah, I was just saying Ricky would be really entertaining and Billy Martin would have 4.5-hour games.
Surely.
That's what would happen, Phil. But you know what? That's not what we're going to see. Very quickly, because I want to ask you about Bellinger's comments. We'll go over the rule changes specifically over the next few weeks. But the one about having to throw to three hitters, are we going to see relievers end up then in left field for a hitter? Is that going to be allowed, or does it have to be three consecutive hitters? Do you know?
That I don't know. I would think the intent would be for it to be three consecutive hitters, because then you talk about really sort of making a mockery of things if you're moving guys around to try and play matchups. I think that becomes a little bit ridiculous.
Unless they're going to say no warm-up pitches. So if you want to run them out to left field, fine. But then when the next guy comes up, he's got to come right back in, right, grab the ball and throw it, which is another circus routine. So we'll see how they get through this, but I do wonder about this because it is part of the strategy of the game. All right, in the last couple of minutes, Cody Bellinger's comments, particularly it hit home here when he said Jose Altuve stole an MVP from Aaron Judge in addition to, oh, by the way, stealing a World Series from us. Cody's really smart. He knew exactly how to make it about somebody else, and then he got to the main topic, right, buried the lead. As a Dodger fan who has suffered through your lifetime with the Dodgers doing nothing for you, how old were you in 1988, Marcus?
11.
Okay. Do you remember the Dodgers winning in 88?
I remember it.
Or were you a Giant fan then? Had you not been a turncoat yet, I guess is what I'm asking.
I was more of an A's fan that year. I loved Vince Eckersley, so okay. I was heartbroken after game one.
Oh, not to mention how heartbroken Eck was. Yeah, again, I'll say it one more time. Don't walk Mike Davis, and you don't have to worry about that Kurt Gibson character coming up and ruining. Just strike Davis out. You win game one. It's done. That's it. They would have called the series off right then. Okay, that's all there is to it. Okay, what about it? Does Bellinger have a point? First of all, I'm going to ask you about Altuve one more time. Is it more and more suspicious watching him clutching so close to his chest that jersey? I mean, do you look at it like the Zapruder film? Are you looking at this thing more and more closely every day?
It's suspicious. I feel like that part of it seems, as sophisticated as this team apparently was, that seems a little bit too sophisticated that they were wired up and had buzzers on them. I don't really know how you make that part operate. But, yeah, it is incredibly suspicious to watch that video now.
It's like a game show. You know, I'm laughing about it. That's because my teams weren't involved in it. I would be very angry if that were the case. It's funny, that point of view, right? Also, what did you make of Tony Kemp's comments? Of course, spent time here in Fresno about the fact that he said, I will not be part of it, or told him he wouldn't be part of it, and there was no negativity toward that. Is that an unusual statement? I mean, I'm just wondering, how do you float that one in the clubhouse? Hey, you guys go ahead. I'm going to sit this one out. I mean, but the sanctity of the clubhouse, right? What you see here, what you hear here, let it stay here when you leave here. He evidently honored that part of it, so they were okay with it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. And, you know, obviously it doesn't seem like there's been any repercussions toward him or any negative blowback to this point. But I don't know. That, to me, sort of seems like, you know, it's like in movies when you have undercover cops with the drug dealers and they want you to, you know, do a little cocaine just to prove that you're on the level. It just seems like, how do you get away with that? But apparently he must have figured out a way to do that. So I guess good for him.
Tony Kemp is Serpico. That's it. All right. last thing about it. Jim Crane, it impacted the game. Well, you said that it impacted the game. No, I didn't. What do you make of Jim Crane's comments?
The Astros, I mean, aside from the scandal, I mean, everything that they've done in the last 2 years, they are the masters at bad PR and foot in mouth disease. He just seems to be the leader of it. But, you know, hey, I guess you can make public statements and then just refute them, even though there's tape saying that you said the opposite thing. That seems to be the way things go nowadays.
A Tommy Lasorda moment. I don't care what the tape says. I didn't say it. That was the Tom Lasorda line. All right, I will leave you with this because it always comes back to the Giants. To salve the wounds of Major League Baseball, I don't know if you heard what Dusty Baker said. He said, first of all, he asked that everybody forgive what happened. Then he said, by the way, don't worry about it. As long as I'm the manager, there's no way the Astros will win another title, because if we're on our way, I will pull the starter too quickly. I will bring Felix Rodriguez in. He'll give up a three-run homer, and we'll go belly up in Game 7. That is my promise to you. Huh? What do you think? That, is that okay?
That explains why I heard rumors of a Scott Spezio comeback.
Oh, man. Any other names you want to toss in before I let you go? Are we done? Are we done with this trip down memory lane? Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot. Again, 31 years. I'll just throw that out at you. Going to be 32. I hope it goes well for you this October, my friend. Hey, Marcus, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you in 2 o'clock hour next week, my friend. Take care.
All right. Take care, Doug.
All right, Marcus Grant, NFL Network, NFL.com. We'll take a break, wrap it up, send you to Nick and Nick momentarily on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.